Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, April 11th, 2022. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. Just to share a few helpful tips, people joining via phone calls, you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon and that will do the trick of muting or unmuting your voice. And if you would like to make some comments, you can virtually raise hands or lower hands by going under reactions and clicking on the raise hand icon. We do have ASL interpreters on this meeting with us. Therefore, if you would please state your name before you make comments, it helps them doing their job well. It also helps everyone who is joining through the phone call knowing who the speaker is. Chair Calabia, at this point, I can go ahead and read the agenda out loud and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Sure, please.
Okay, thank you. I would share my screen for the convenience for everyone who is able to see the screen. So bear with me for a quick moment. And I'm hoping my screen is visible at this point. It is? Okay. So after I read the agenda out loud, we will go ahead and take the roll call of all of the AAC committee members. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approving of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have a presentation by Tom Pei and Shankar Sevak on Waymap wayfinding application. They will give us some update on the upcoming pilot. At 4:45, we have a team to present station planning projects. At 5:15, we have the Purple Line project team. They will be sharing information about the Purple Line work that's being done in the area. At 5:45, we will take any public comments, and 6 p.m. the meeting will adjourn. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen. Now I will go ahead and take the roll call. All the committee members who are present, please confirm your presence. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you.
Vanessa. Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Yep, here. Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher. Marcy Goldstein.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marcy. Melanie Henderson. Melanie may not be able to join us for a few meetings due to health reasons. Steve Caffin has informed that he is on vacation and he may not be able to join for next few meetings. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel. Anthony Oberg has informed us that he will be out for some time due to medical reasons. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. And Kelly Simonow. Okay, that concludes the roll call for today's meeting. We do have some presenters with us on this meeting, and I will just give them a friendly reminder that if you have any presentation that you would be using, any PowerPoint presentations, please do describe those for the convenience of our members who are blind or may have low vision. So thank you in advance for that. As a gentle reminder, all the speakers, not the presenters, anybody who would like to make some comments, public comments, you would be allotted 3 minutes. 30 seconds in advance of the end of the 3 minutes. So we will alert you to let you know that your time is coming up. At the end of 3 minutes, you would hear a sound alerting you that your 3 minutes have ended. This practice is done because we want to make sure that everyone who wants to make some comments gets the time. And if we have any additional time afterwards, we will come back and take any additional comments from the speakers. At this point, I would ask Chair Calabia for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you, Anu. As we did last meeting during the AAC, I mentioned briefly what we had discussed back in February. I'll do it again and we can then bring it up for a vote to approve. In March, that is March 14th, we talked about the platform improvement project, which is sort of related to what we're talking about today. we also, station planning projects we talked about as well. Brooklyn, Navy Yard, Cleveland Park. and we discussed again the problems around floating bus stops, problems that are that confront people with disabilities and seniors and the elderly. We also talked about, we also talked about global mass transit in the sense that Steve Kaffin shared with us a couple of dozens of photos that he took on his travels across the country and as well in some other countries, including Australia, the features of accessibility for people when they board buses or transit or trains. So given that, would somebody make a motion to approve these minutes, please? A motion to approve, anyone?
So moved, Tino.
Yes?
So moved.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any objections? If there are no objections, we've approved the minutes for March 14th. Going on to this agenda for today, let's see, we are hearing from a variety of guests on Waymap finding a Tom Pei. Is he here? Anu, do you know Chair, if the
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. Yes, Tom Pei and Shankar Sevak, they're both connected.
Okay. Well, please, if you could move forward now with your discussion. You're muted. You're muted, yep. Tom.
Okay.
Tom, you're still muted.
There you are.
Great. Thank you, Chairman. My name is Tom Pei, P-E-Y. I am the Chairman and Chief Executive of Waymap. I am a white male with brown hair, blue eyes, and today I'm wearing a blue open neck shirt. I'm coming to you from the Loyola Marymount University campus in Los Angeles, where the weather is very sunny and nice and warm. So thank you very much for having us here today. The purpose of our update to your committee is to let you know precisely what we are now doing and what we have done since we last spoke to you. To recap, Waymap is working with WMATA to integrate the bus and rail transportation system across DC, subject to successful trials being completed at Silver Spring and Braddock Road. Since we last spoke to you, we have successfully mapped the station, and we're very grateful to WMATA, Carol Lopez and her team in particular, for giving us the maps and the and supporting us in doing that particular work. So that you know what we have done, we have done a LIDAR scan of both stations, which means that we have absolute and precise maps. On top of that, we have taken 360-degree video images of the stations. And from that, we were able to see any other items that we needed to put into the maps other than the walls in order to make the maps accessible. So in other words, where the position of stairs were, if there was any furniture on the platform or anywhere in the station that needed to be, we needed to navigate around. All of that information has now been collected and we have accurate maps. I'm going to introduce my friend, and colleague, Jankar Sebak. Jankar is currently in DC and working with the maps just to make sure that when we start our work with you guys, we, you know, everything is, as we say in the UK, tickety-boo. But, and I think Jankar is also going to make a plea for some of you to come out and actually try the stations. So can I hand over to you, Jankar, to give a further update? Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Hello, everyone. As Tom mentioned, I'm here in DC, just arrived yesterday, so slightly struggling with the jet lag, but ready to roar. So I'm just to give you a background, I'm the director of engineering at Waymap, and I'm also taking charge of coordinations and some of the efforts we are doing here in Washington, D.C. for the upcoming pilot projects. As we briefed in the last committee meeting, the pilot project is very much on track. We are commencing the pilot project on the 25th of April. It will run for 2 weeks and it will end on the 6th of May. We are expecting 2 VI users per day during this trial. And we are also anticipating some of the participants from WMATA staff as well. So up to 40 users in total, which will enable this pilot project. To give you some more background on what this means. So first of all, this current pilot project scope is for the blind users. The other disability users will benefit from it, but the system is currently tuned and customized for the blind users. And at the moment we will not be able to support any wheelchair users given it needs extra hardware. The device is going to be a mobile phone most of the navigation will be done through audible instructions, which will be delivered from a handheld speaker held by Waymap staff accompanying the participants. We don't have any presentation prepared for that, but what we do have is just a very small demo, which can give you some flavor and indication of what to expect on the trial day. using our application. So I'm just going to play a quick demo of a real route between a bus stop and a platform at Braddock Road Station in Washington, D.C. So I just configured my mobile phone here with me to set up this route. Generally, once the route is set up, it comes up with a summary of the instructions. And once the phone is set up and once the participant is ready for the navigation, this is what you would expect throughout the course of the route. These instructions are going to come thick and fast because this is just a demo. But in real world situation, as the participants move along the route, it will be timed according to that. So I'll now start the instructions. The demo is from a bus stop outside the Braddock Road to an outbound platform.
Which you are on Braddock Road Station. Stand with the road to your left.
Is it audible to you all?
Yes.
Okay.
You are at Braddock Road Station. Stand with the road to your left. Go forward for 2 steps and then turn to 3 o'clock. In 5 steps, turn to 9 o'clock and then continue straight. In 9 steps, turn to 3 o'clock, passing through the double doors. After 3 o'clock, turn, continue straight. In 9 steps, turn to 2 o'clock, passing through the double doors. After 2 o'clock, turn, continue straight. In 9 steps, turn to 1 o'clock and then pass through the fare gate. After the fare gate, continue straight. In 9 steps, take the stairs up. Take the stairs up. At the top of the stairs, continue straight. In 2 steps, turn to 9 o'clock for platform outbound. In 5 steps, you will arrive at your destination. You have arrived at your destination, platform outbound.
So this was a very quick and very fast journey through a route at the Braddock Road. As you may have heard that the instructions are configured and they will be customizable as per the user's requirement. So we use a clock analogy here, but there are other options where we can set the degrees and other modes of attitude determination. And all of these will be briefed to participants in advance, just before the trial. So we can customize as much as possible to participants' needs. One other thing is that this phone has to be holstered to participants' waist, which is the requirement for this pilot. We are currently working on a next phase of the development where this will not be a requirement. Sorry, I'm just getting some noise from
sounds like an Amber Alert. Sorry about that, everybody.
Yes, exactly. I'm surprised. This is the first time I have heard something like that. So, is everyone getting this alert here in DC?
We heard the alert.
From time to time, if there are alerts,
I have received it here in Maryland.
Okay, right. Just to mention that that was not from the Waymap application. It was just from the authorities. We can now take any questions, but I think the whole idea was to give you an update and give you some flavor about what is to come during the pilot.
Shankar, this is Tino.
Alert, audio now unmuted.
This is Tino. You mentioned that the Waymap is for people who are deaf. And it surely should be and is, but I'm not, I'm a little hard of hearing, but I'm not deaf. On the other hand, when I took the trial at Braddock Road, I found it very useful because I wasn't familiar with where things are at the station or at the bus terminal. And in particular, the trial that's coming up at Silver Spring, when I go there, I'm always confused because there's three levels of bus bays there. And I'm always wondering which one I'm supposed to go to. So I would imagine that the Waymap Finding Service would help me as well, or anybody, because it is a very confusing station. So you mentioned that it was for the deaf, but it's more than that, correct?
Yes, absolutely. It will help. And I think the last, very last instruction you heard, I think that was just a kind of a middle point for any realistic journey. So I think once we have the full journey integration, you will hear what train is coming, what time it will be coming, if there are any other delays. And if you are going out of the platform to a bus stop, then it will also take you to, you know, any desired route that you might be planning to take, along with, you know, very precise instructions.
Okay, one last question for me. when I took the trial at Braddock Road, you know, I forgot the young man who was carrying out the demonstration then. But anyway, when he was walking me back to the station, we came across several e-scooters that were laying in the roadway, and the wayfinding app did not pick those up and alert me that there was something in the way. Have you now included such problems to overcome with the wayfinding map?
It's still in our to-do list. It's still out of the scope for this pilot and probably for the next pilot as well, because it uses a very different technology and very different hardware, which is mostly not available on mobile devices. It's a next generation of navigation system, so you can either use a camera or you can use the LiDAR scans. So only the very latest phones and very expensive ones have started.
Sherry calling.
Integrate these sensors, and it will be a few years before it can become a mainstream feature of any mobile phones.
Did you say a few years or 2 years?
I would say, I think 2 years is a more realistic timeline, yes.
Okay. Any questions from the members, the other members?
Chair Calabria, this is Zanu. Denise Rush has her hand up, and then Vanessa Coles. Ms. Rush, go ahead and unmute yourself, please.
Hi, this is Ms. Rush. I thought I heard you say that this pilot is for blind people only. Is that correct? Is that low vision, blind people? Only, did I hear that correctly?
It is customized for the visually impaired users, including blind users. However, the other disability users will have a useful experience from it. Just Tino mentioned that even, you know, it can be useful to any users who are commuting to especially unknown stations or places.
And you said it's not available for wheelchair users. Is that correct also?
For this pilot, it's not. That's
yes, correct. I'm saying just for this pilot.
Yeah.
Okay, so anybody can sign up for the pilot, except if they're in a wheelchair and what other?
I think generally just wheelchair users, yes. I think every other user should be able to get something out from it.
Hi, this is Tom Pei here. When we were doing the proof of concept trial at Crystal City, we did have a lady who came in a wheelchair, but she was accompanied by her husband. He was, pushing the wheelchair for her. And what we were able to do was to allow him to wear the phone, we were able to give her the Waymap experience. She was also visually impaired. So I guess I don't want to discourage anybody from trying it out, but if you've got a wheelchair only, we just have not, we do have a solution for that, but we're not trialing it on this pilot, but we can maybe put it in at a later pilot stage.
Sir, that was me. So should I sign up or not?
Yes, please. And bring your handsome husband with you. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Denise. Vanessa?
Yes, thank you. So I have a couple of questions because I did do the pilot when we were at Braddock Road. And with that walking and swaying, you know, to get the calculation of how many sways or your particular sway, that's going to adjust automatically whether you're tall or short, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, one thing you mentioned when I was listening, well, the demo mentioned, it said take the stairs. So is it not letting you know whether it's an escalator or hard steps, or will it adjust?
There is an option to avoid escalators or stairs or lifts, so we can configure this beforehand, and the system will adjust according to that configuration.
Okay. And then my last question is, usually when I come to a place, it helps me if I have like a layout of the land. So will this is going to take, say, for instance, the bus is in the middle of the island and you got to cross over and it's traffic or something, is it going to take into consideration, or is this just from curb to curb from the subway station itself?
Yeah, I think it is going to be curb to curb using, predefined crossings. And I think your question is similar to what Tino mentioned about the e-scooters. So I think anything blocking the generally defined path, the system is currently not being able to detect them.
Okay, but if I'm coming from the taxi island, you know, that's like in the middle, and I have to cross a little walkway, is it going to help me to get from the taxi stand?
So again, it will come down to what points of interest and landmarks we have captured in these maps. And I think as far as I remember, we have captured both taxi stands for Braddock Road and Silver Spring.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay, this is Anu. If any other members, Doris, go ahead. Doris, you can come off of mute, go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering whether the system is useful in a station like King Street, where there are multiple bus bays, whether it will help.
Of course, this is Anu. Your voice is coming a little faint.
Are you not hearing me?
We can hear you. Your voice is not as loud, though.
Oh, I'm so sorry. No. I was just wondering whether the system will work in a station with multiple bus bays, like King Street or Vienna or, you know, Springfield.
It should work as long as those data are captured in maps. So for example, Silver Spring has probably, I think, around 24 bays span across three different levels. So I think it's the scans that Tom mentioned earlier, the LiDAR scans, and they are very precise in capturing this kind of information.
But what I'm asking too is it only going to give you, so if it does that, is it only going to give you the bus bay number so that you have to already know, you know, I want to get the 7A and it's at bus bay 5 and at Pentagon?
I think you will not even have to know which bus bay might be relevant to you, as long as you know where you are going, because we are planning to integrate the GTFS feed from WMATA, which will basically come back with all the detailed information, including which line to take for your final destination and which bus bays will be relevant for that, including the timing of the departures.
So you'll be able to read the signage on the bay itself, on the shelters?
Yes.
So it'll tell you the route, for example?
Yes. And it will probably tell you the approximate time when you will get to that destination. So anything that is...
It won't get you there, though, right? I mean, you have to know where you're going.
Hello, this is Tom Pei. Now, if you are getting off a train at Silver Spring and you want to catch a bus to another destination, the app will know what bus that you have specified. It will know what bus stop number that bus is going to come to that stop at. It will know what time the bus is going to come. Yeah, and it will tell you, it will take you from the train, from the platform to that bus stop. And it will tell you roughly, if you wish to know, what time you will arrive at the bus stop, so you can see if you are going to actually make that particular bus or miss it. Yeah.
I could never use it for an impromptu.
In other words, could you just explain what that means for me?
So I would be going from work, and normally I would go to Roslyn, for example, but somebody invited me to go to Old Town, and so I would want to get and then meet them. You know, so I'm going to have to take a bus from Old Town from King Street Station someplace. And so it would, but if I hadn't planned that trip, right? It's not going to. Is it going to tell me, if I hadn't planned that trip, could I just get on the subway, and when I get there, have it list out, at the minimum, have it list out bus bay 1, 2, 3, 20?
If you...
The number of the bus bay so that if I get from the station manager, you know, I haven't planned this trip, so I get from the station manager which bus bay... the bus to West End is.
Yeah. So long as you tell, so long as you tell the system where you want to go, it's a bit like Google Maps. So if you tell the system where you want to go, then it will get you there. And you can either tell it the bus bay number, or you can tell it the bus. You know, the bus destination that you want to get, and that will match it with the WMATA information systems, passenger feed that comes to all passengers. All we need to know is that you're starting from A, and you want to go to B, and then the app will do the rest for you.
That's cool. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Patrick, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi, thanks. I don't know if I missed this or not, but I know you were talking Braddock Road. What was it? The 23rd through May 6th. What about Silver Spring? What were the dates for that?
Yeah, same dates. We will be basically running pilot on alternative days. So I think one day we'll do Silver Spring, another day.
I see. Okay, good. All right, so you're looking for volunteers, I see. Good. Okay.
Anu,
so it would be very similar to the very similar experience in Silver Spring. I know you've got the transit center, and you said you've done a lot of work there, plus the subway.
Yes, both.
Both. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, no, that was a challenge for everyone involved, actually. But I think we have come through that. So I think both the bus station and the metro stations are now mapped.
I particularly, as a visually impaired person, have a challenge trying to find where the blasted elevators are on the getting to the transit center from the subway. So that would be good if that's possible to walk that. That'll be great. Okay.
Yeah. No, it is a real challenge. Actually, I was there just 2 hours ago, and I think it took me a while to find the actual metro station.
Yeah. It's worse when it's raining too. Yes. All right. Yes. Thanks.
Anu, do you have six volunteers now for Silver Spring or what?
So Chair Calabria, this is Zeno. The six volunteers that you're referring to is for another test that we are holding in front of JGP, and that is on May the 3rd,
right?
For fare boxes. Yes. For that.
I'm sorry.
No problem. Regarding the WayMap application, the pilot for Silver Spring and Braddock Road, everybody should have received an email from me this afternoon. And just like Shankar said, that the days will be alternating, I will make sure to send additional information to all the members as soon as that's available.
Yes.
But to answer your questions, yes, we have six members for that specific project.
Any other members?
Audio now unmuted.
I see Vanessa has her hand up again, and Doris. So we have at 7 minutes at this point. So Vanessa, go ahead, please.
Okay, real quick. It's kind of tagging on to what the gentleman just said. Is there going to be any alerts, for instance, if the elevator is out of order or the escalator is out of order? Will Metro provide you guys with notices? I used that when I was doing my trial that day.
Yeah, so that is something we are manually doing at the moment. So we are reading the WMATA feed from their website. And we also have a kind of a course integration with the GTFS feed, which is able to provide this information as well. There is some delay in getting this information. So our current plan is to make sure that every day WayMap staff is able to monitor which services are operational and which are not. And according to that, the app will be making these adjustments. So yes, I think on the trial day, if anything is not working, for example, at the moment, one of the escalators at Braddock Road is not functioning. So I think those kind of information we are able to capture and make sure that the system is interpreting them correctly.
And my last question is, can I send this, because I have a couple of support groups that I'm a part of, can we send this out to the general public to also try, or you just want to stick within the AAC, the committee?
Tom, do you want to address that?
Yeah, sorry, this is Tom Pay. Please get it out to anybody that you believe would be interested. We are particularly interested in people who are blind or low vision for this particular trial, but we would really like as many volunteers as we can. Anu, would it be right for them to go through you, or would you like them to contact us directly?
If we can have a list of all the participants, intending participants, that would help us coordinate it better. And then as we get the information, we will be sharing with you.
Thank you, Anu.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Down the road, I imagine that the members of the advisory committee would be issued the WayMap finding instrument. That will be at no cost, right, for us transit users?
Yes, Chairman. Once we've completed, we would prepare a report outlining our findings. And one of the things that we do want our volunteers to do is to help us to improve this service that we provide. So if there are any helpful comments or criticisms, we are really open to hearing those, and we will report those faithfully as well, letting you know what we're doing to rectify or improve our system as a result.
After the pilots and after the improvements, and when the WayMap is in full function, will it be free to any users?
Yes.
Yes, Chairman. It is free to all users, whether they have a disability or not. So all Wamata users will benefit from the app free of charge.
Excellent. Doris, did you have another question?
Yes. I just wanted to ask whether there's an announcement that, official announcement that you all are coming out with about this, that we could distribute through Independent Center, Northern Virginia, the Center for Independent Living that serves the entire Northern Virginia area, and also two other key contacts, and the Alexandria Commission on Persons with Disabilities, who I know will want to participating in the pilot, and the Arlington County Disability Advisory Commission. And then the last question is, when do we over in the on the Orange Line get to test this out for Fairfax County residents?
Tom, you've gone back on mute again. Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. Yes. So we are doing Virginia in the second round. So, Jankar, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is in September, yeah?
Yes.
So is this gonna from Braddock Road, is this gonna also be useful with dash buses? Because a lot of dash buses go out of there.
Yes, Chairman, yes, Tom Pay here. We are working with Carol Lopez and her team to talk to the Dash bus provider. It would be our hope, subject to us completing this pilot successfully, that the Dash bus providers would also welcome having the WayMap app on their system. Because that would mean that more public transport users could benefit from it and make the whole experience far more inclusive, particularly if you have to change from a WMATA system to a DAS system.
I mentioned the Alexandria Commission on Persons with Disabilities because actually they meet this Wednesday, and I could carry that information there. And then the Arlington Commission will meet a week from tomorrow so.
Oh, thank you, Chairman. And I'm in both, Shankar and I am in DC. I'm in DC from this Thursday. Shankar is there already. And Annie,
no,
if you want
to. People with disabilities on the commission themselves.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yes, please. You know, subject to a new saying that's okay, we're absolutely happy for you to talk about this. Yeah.
I mean, just carry some information with me at least.
This is Carol Lopez. Excuse me. Anu's going to send the advisory committee an invitation if she hasn't already. You're welcome to forward that information to other groups that are interested in participating. The contact people would be the same as for the advisory committee. Actually, Anu, is that the case? They would be contacting you or is there another number?
They can contact me and then I can forward the information. And we are obviously doing it to make sure that the schedule is maintained because it's going to be by appointments. So,
yes.
Thank you, Doris and Carol. We're into the next agenda item unless there's one pressing last question for Tom or Shankar. Hearing no questions, we can move on to the next presentation. And I thank Tom again and Shankar. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Okay, Chair Calabia, our next presentation is about station planning projects. And Zach Billett, I just want to make sure that the team, Zach is
hey.
On. And
yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Anu, will you be sharing the presentation? I can also do it. Oh, you're on mute.
Thank you. It's your preference, Zach. You're able to share if you would like. If you would like me to share, I can do that.
I can. Okay. Just give me one moment, please. Is that visible?
I can see it.
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Thank you for the opportunity to present. My name is Zach Billett. I'm a station planning project manager at WMATA. I've had the opportunity to present to the Accessibility Advisory Committee in the past on station capacity planning projects. I believe I spoke with this group last month on Brookland, Navy Yard, and Cleveland Park.
Yes.
I'm going to present on two more projects today. And as a reminder, if you weren't with us with the past presentations, we have a number of projects that look at crowding that we identified in 2019 at stations in various locations at stations. And while crowding isn't the biggest issue today because ridership is still recovering, we've projected that these were problems and they're likely to be problems again with ridership returning, and these projects to address them will likely take a long time, you know, if we're going to do any kind of station modifications, for example, the addition of elevators, platform widening, new entrances, etc. These projects will take a while, and since we know they were issues in the past, we are working to study them now. So today I'm going to present on two additional projects adding to the list for our current active projects. We have Bethesda and Twinbrook. What I'm gonna do is just go over the key issue we identified at each of these stations and then provide some orientation to the stations as they currently exist. And then put it to the group for the opportunity to make recommendations and any considerations we should have while we begin these projects. Now, again, these projects are largely motivated by crowding that we identified. Crowding can be in several locations. We're not looking at crowding on trains. We're looking at crowding within the stations, and that can occur on platforms, at vertical circulation, and at fair gates. And for these two projects, I'm presenting Bethesda and Twinbrook. We've identified crowding in both of them in vertical circulation. So I'll move on. I'll present these two together, and then I will pause for any comments from the group. Bethesda, so the purpose of this study is to identify infrastructure enhancements to improve pedestrian flow, vertical circulation, and access at Bethesda Station. And one thing to note for Bethesda is there is a north entrance, and as part of the Purple Line project, which I believe you'll have an update on later in the meeting, there's the consideration for a new south entrance that will be closer to the Purple Line station. So the issue we identified here is vertical circulation. And as part of the project, we're going to be looking at the impacts to the station of the new Purple Line service. So the goal to develop concepts that would address crowding and access at the existing north entrance, which will consider the impacts associated with the new Purple Line station and the new south entrance. So the current configuration of the station, it's a center platform with single tracks on either side. This is just a red line station. The station has one mezzanine at the north end of the station with a single elevator to the platform and a single stair and two escalators. There are three escalators for access to the surface. Bethesda is one of our deepest stations, so these are very long escalators. And there is an elevator to Montgomery Lane off of Wisconsin. And then the Wisconsin Avenue is accessed by an escalator, stair, and additionally an elevator that WMATA does not own from the bus loop. So that's just an orientation to the station. We'll come back to this in the discussion, but I'm gonna move on to Twinbrook. So Twinbrook, also on the red line. So the purpose of this study is to identify infrastructure enhancements to improve vertical circulation, considering the development of opportunities around the station. There is currently several large projects underway, and several more are being finalized. And this station is likely to benefit in terms of ridership from that development. So again, the issue we identified is crowding and vertical circulation, and we're looking at developing alternatives that would address that. One consideration here is the addition of a possible north entrance, which the city of Rockville has asked us to study. We believe we haven't, the project is in its preliminary phase, but we don't believe a north entrance is necessary to resolve the issues we've identified, though we will study it and consider it as how well it will address the issue. The orientation of the station, again, red line station with the center platform. This is above ground. There is one mezzanine with entrances to the east and west of the station. Our station provides a connection across the tracks here. It's not just our tracks, but there's also CSX freight tracks at the station. There is one escalator, one elevator, and one stairway between the mezzanine and the platform. And this clearly doesn't meet the needs for guaranteed access, as there's only one elevator, which if it goes down, the station lacks accessibility. I'll just point out one key issue we did hear from the city of Rockville for this project is that our station, as I mentioned, provides the only access across our tracks within a mile and a half to the north and south. Our station, when it's open, is the only way to get across. And one thing we're looking into is the opportunity to provide that connection at all times. We don't know if it's possible yet. But obviously when our station closes after operating hours, there's no way to cross here. And the the next street crossings are a mile and a half apart. So that's something we're also looking into as part of this project. I will pause there. Again, we are just in the early stages of these projects, and we're trying to get a sense for all of the other considerations, all of the other sort of conditions to consider while we get started. And I will be happy to hear any recommendations from this group. Also, happy to hear anything following this meeting too. I'm in contact with Anoush. You can contact her, you can contact me with any other issues. So I'll stop there.
Yes. You mentioned you're going to deal with the vertical movement. In addition to escalators, are you also going to be dealing with elevators? And one of the issues that we have with elevators is the confused configuration of buttons. They can be confused with the emergency button and the up or down button. The other question we have relates to waiting areas, for example, on the platform or in the station. The waiting areas, we were hoping would eventually have benches that have handrails or some way that people with disabilities can hold on to something to rise up from a chair, those sorts of things. Are you going to be dealing with that, or just mainly with the platform, the escalators and such?
Thank you for those questions. The key focus for these projects is looking at lessening the crowding we found in the vertical circulation at these two stations. And that will likely mean studying the opportunity to add elevators at both stations, particularly serving the platforms. So those will be recommendations that we will weigh against various alternatives. But these stations, you know, they were not designed under the current access standards the agency currently adheres to, which is that any level change requires two elevators. So these projects are looking into the addition of elevators. As far as you pointed out the issue with buttons, I completely agree with you. This is something that confuses me often when I use elevators. I think this is more straightforward on the ones we've added more recently, and our elevators are on regular replacement cycles. I'm not sure of the useful lives of these, but I believe they are getting better. I'm not sure. This project won't be addressing that, I'm afraid. And then your other question of waiting areas, that also is unfortunately outside of the scope of this project. I do believe that with the platform, the major platform modernization projects that have been done in a few locations, I believe it was Green Line stations last summer, as well as the airport station, and some of the yellow-blue stations last summer. I think those are adding more shelters, but again, it's not part of the scope of this project.
But given that there are already existing waiting areas, how about somehow adding to the benches some sort of arm rail, and beyond the arm rail itself, some way that people with disabilities can be helped from a seating position by having some sort of something to hold on to when they rise up?
I don't believe within this project we're going to address that, but it's something that I believe is covered under the major station modernization projects underway, but it's something I'm unsure of. So I appreciate you bringing that up with regard to these two.
Yes, Kelly and Doris, Kelly?
Yes, hi, this is Kelly Simino. And I know Twin Brook has a parking facility. I don't know if the other station you referenced does or not, but what all are y'all doing to look at, as you're looking at crowding issues within stations, looking at adding additional accessible parking spots that would account for, you know, crowding issues and the usage of accessible parking?
Unfortunately, this project within the scope of it will not be looking at the parking areas. There's currently a parking master plan underway within the Office of Real Estate and Parking. And there are also several joint development projects underway. I don't know of any at Bethesda, but there is one, I believe, at Twin Brook. Those may be dealing with parking, but not under this project.
This is Carol Lopez, Kelly. Currently, there is a project to renovate the parking, the surface parking lot at Twin Brook. And the surface parking lot currently has more than the required ADA compliant spaces. And they're going to stay that way. It's a very tight parking, very highly used parking space, but I don't remember the number that we have there, but it's more than what is required. And we have added accessible parking in areas where we have such a high demand, if it's possible.
Okay, so there's been some separate study looking at the capacity usage of accessible parking separate from this.
In that particular station, there happens to be more accessible parking than required.
Kelly, wasn't your original question related to the ability to reserve?
I guess pre-COVID times, we had talked about the issue of there being a lack of accessible parking for reserve parking spots. I was using East Falls Church as an example to that. I don't know if Twin Brook might be one of the parking lots that was needing to be adjusted.
Twin Brook will receive a reserved accessible parking spot.
A meaning one?
At Twin Brook, two.
Two, okay.
Two van accessible spaces.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that okay, Kelly?
I was just curious, generally speaking, if this capacity project was looking at parking. It sounds like the answer is no, it's just looking at the inward station itself. So I guess that answers my question.
Yes.
Yes.
Doris, you had your hand up.
Yeah. So it's been some time since I've been to Twin Brook, but my question is that, correct me if I'm wrong, so Twin Brook is up on Rockville Pike, and it's right across Rockville Pike from Congressional Plaza Shopping Center. I said that wrong. The Congressional Plaza? Yes, because that's where, okay. So there are a lot of apartments and residential properties over on the opposite side of, Rockville Pike from where the station is, and just as there is on the station side. But I'm wondering whether they're thinking about, or whether you're thinking and looking at the engineering regarding having some kind of elevator entrance at the minimum over on that side of Rockville Pike, because I think that would be very helpful to many people. There's a senior complex over there. There are affordable housing properties over there. So, and there's lots of shopping that people could go to.
Sorry, was the question about access from the, I guess it's the west side of Rockville Pike to the station?
The question is about the station right is on the, I don't know what to call that. The station is on one side of Rockville Pike, and across the other side of Rockville Pike is the southbound. On Rockville Pike, there's a big shopping center, and there are apartments behind it and stuff. So I was thinking to reduce congestion is one of the things that you might be thinking about is having a second entrance to the station.
Well, we are looking at the, at least the city of Rockville has asked us to study an additional north entrance, which is likely to be sort of the high cost option. And we may be able to add additional elevator within the station area itself. But we are going to study the possibility of a north entrance. I mean, it would be, you know, directly from the station to the immediate surroundings. I don't think it would extend all the way to Rockville Pike, but you know, we're going to study what that possible north entrance could look like.
The north entrance is just further out towards Rockville City from.
Well, there's several large developments in the area right adjacent to the station, and you know, we're in close coordination with
North and South. Does Rockville Pike go north?
It sort of goes northwest, southeast.
Right. So I think I was talking about that Twin Brook is what? I'm not east side of Rockville Pike, and
yes,
Gresham Plaza is on the west side. So we're, you know, on the same side as the golf course. So that's why I was asking that really dangerous having to cross Rockville Pike, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, you get out of the station and then you're facing a really difficult cross for people with disabilities and sensory disabilities. So that's why I was asking.
Okay. Any other questions?
Kelly, I see you just raised your hand up again.
Oh, no, I was trying to lower my hand. Sorry about that.
No worries. Okay. This is Anu. Any other members who have any questions, please come off of mute if you would like. Okay. Seems like there are no other questions. I'm sorry, Chair Calabria, were you about to say something?
Well, no, but yes. Okay. Zach, I don't know if you're available for the next item, but the purple line intersects the WMATA rail system. Will you be dealing with any intersection across the with the purple line?
The only I can speak to at the moment is, as I mentioned with the Bethesda study, we're looking at the impacts of how station passenger movements will be affected by the new purple line station at Bethesda. That's the only focus, at least for these projects.
Okay. Well, it may be that something might come up about entering the Purple Line station. And since it'll intersect at Bethesda, there may be some relationship. Can you hang around just in case?
I don't know that I'd be able to. It hasn't been a focus for me, so I don't think I'd be able to necessarily answer any additional questions other than what I've shared. So, okay.
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. If there are any additional questions, and if their members have any further questions, I can be contacted please feel free to send me your comments or questions via email afterwards, and I will be happy to share them, forward them to the appropriate teams to get their questions answered.
Sure. Okay, thanks, Anu.
Thank you, Zach.
We'll see you the next time you have a project that you can discuss. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for the opportunity to present. Have a good day.
Anu?
Yes.
We have Lauren Garrett and a number of other people. Are they available?
So we probably have Gary Witherspoon and Matthew Pollack from the Purple Line team. And I see that they have already shared the screen. So please go ahead and start your presentation.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. I'm Gary Witherspoon. I'm Deputy Project Director with the Purple Line. We're happy to be with you this evening, and I'm glad to introduce our project director, Matt Pollack. Matt,
thank you. Take it away. All right. Thank you, Gary. Good evening, everybody. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your patience, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about the Purple Line today. Can everybody hear me okay? I'm speaking directly into my computer. Hopefully it's working.
There's a little bit of feedback, but I can hear you.
Okay, yeah. I heard the feedback too. That's why I was asking. I don't know if anybody else has their microphone open or something. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the Purple Line. Next slide, please. The agenda slide, Gary.
Okay, let's see if I can move it ahead here. Did it progress?
Yeah, we can see it.
It did, yes.
Okay.
And Gary, if you don't mind, can you stay on mute just in case that's part of the feedback that we've got? I guess we're probably in the same building.
Yes, I will.
So today I'm going to talk a little bit about the Purple Line in general. I know we've been somewhat flying under the radar, and perhaps people are not as much aware of where we are as far as a project and a transit system. I will give a timeline of when we plan to be operational and carrying passengers. I'll give a brief overview of the parties that are actually building this project. And then I will spend a little bit of time talking about the various ADA design aspects that are being incorporated into the project. Then speaking about the stations and the vehicles themselves. Next slide, please. The Purple Line is a light rail project that is running east and west, as opposed to most of the Washington Metro system, which is mostly running in a northern the southern configuration, heading into and out of DC from the various jurisdictions. We are a 16-mile long system. This slide happens to show the alignment on a map layout. We're 16 miles running from Bethesda on the far west side over to New Carrollton on the eastern side. We have 21 stations on this light rail line, and four of those stations are connected and are transfer points to the Washington Metro. Those four locations are at Bethesda Metro, which we heard about a little bit before from Zachary. Then we connect at the downtown Silver Spring station on the red line. We connect to College Park on the green line. And then all the way on the east side, we connect at the New Carrollton station on the orange line. This next slide shows the map again, but it's kind of overlaid on a modified WMATA map, if you will. So it shows the connections, the two connections on the red line on green, yellow, and orange. But it also notes that we do connect to three MARC lines. We also connect to Amtrak, and at many of our stations, we are also connecting to regional and local bus routes. We have a new project timeline. For those who may not be familiar, our project has had some difficulties for the last couple of years. I think the Washington Post calls us beleaguered, but we're coming out on the other end. About 2 years ago, our primary design build contractor walked off the job. And so we were unable to continue with the way we were, our contract was set up. For the last 18 months or so, we, the Maryland Transit Administration, have been managing the construction ourselves and also the design, while our private-public partnership, P3, financing partner, the concessionaire, has been trying to resolicit for a new design and build contractor. We are just at the very end of that process, and in spring, which is hopefully in the next couple weeks, we hope to have our new design and construction manager on board and mobilizing and getting started, so that by the summer of this year, we will be back to a full construction schedule. From there, we are looking for our light rail vehicles to start arriving at our facility in Glenridge in Prince George's County in the fall of 2023. In the summer of 2024, we will have a test track completed. That's about a mile of track running from New Carrollton over to Beacon Heights, the Riverdale area. So we are going to be using that 1 mile track to test for about a year to 16 months. We hope that by the winter of 2025, the system will be entirely constructed and ready for full testing. And then we will be doing another probably 12 months of testing that will take us to winter of 2026, at which point we will be going into revenue service. So we are, it looks like 4+ years before we're going to be carrying passengers. This next slide just shows the structure of the overall procurement project. The Maryland Department of Transportation, of which the Maryland Transit Administration is a part of, we are overseeing the project. We do that through what we call our concessionaire, our financing partner, which have been known as Purple Line Transit Partners, or PLTP. They've remained with us through these difficulties we've had for the last 2 years, and they have in turn come back, and we are going to contract with a new design and construction firm. They're known as Maryland Transit Solutions, MTS. They're made up of two firms headquartered out of Spain. One is called Dragados, and they have a USA firm that called Dragados USA, and then another firm called OHL, and it's their OHL USA affiliate that are combining together to take us through construction over the next few years. Most of the other partners are remaining the same. We're still having an independent firm operate and maintain the system for 30 years as part of the contract that we have, this P3 contract. That firm is known as Purple Line Transit Operators, or PLTO, and they're made up of a venture between ACI, which is mostly an operations firm, and CAF, that is our Spanish vehicle manufacturer, and they are going to have their hands in operating the system for 30 years when we go and start in 2026. Next slide, please. Talking a little bit about the ADA and some of the accessibility. For those whose experience is mostly with subway systems such as Washington Metro, we are a slightly different transit system. As a light rail system, we are built to run within a street. And we have much smaller platforms. We don't run as fast as the Washington Metro because in those times when we're running in the street, we are operating with the same traffic signals as cars. Some of the items that we have to accommodate persons with disabilities and other requirements. We've set up an accessible route into our platforms, into our stations from each direction. We of course have the ramps to get us up the right slopes into the platforms. We are mostly running at the street level. We do have a couple stations that are aerial stations, and we do have, Gary, do we have an underground station? Yes, no. I don't know that we have an underground station, although we do have the connection at Bethesda Metro where we do connect to the Metro, which is itself an underground station. We will be using ticket vending machines to sell our fares. They'll be fully accessible. We will be using variable visual message signage in cooperation with public address systems for messages. We will have telephone systems, elevators at a few stations where we do go aerial. And our trains allow for level boarding. Our platforms are slightly taller than a curb. And that allows for direct boarding without having to use any types of lifts onto the stations. I'm sorry, onto the vehicles or off of the vehicles. Next slide, please. Okay. This picture shows sort of the visual of how our stations look. You'll see they resemble closer to a bus stop than they do to a metro station. Basically, they're only slightly taller or higher than a street curb. They're going to have a different look from the Washington Metro stations, but in general, they're going to be fairly simplistic designs. We will have the emergency telephones available. We will have the tactile warning strips, just like you have on the Washington Metro system. We will have cameras at each platform, which will be monitored by our operations team. And of course, every station has been studied for the National Fire Protection egress and ingress requirements that have strict requirements for the time it takes for passengers in an emergency to be able to get off the platform. In most cases, when the platforms are fairly simplistic and they're just at street level, that egress is not particularly different than egressing from a bus stop. However, there are some stations that are a little more difficult. And I believe there's at least one or two stations that will have patron refuge areas if there are any concerns with full evacuation. Next slide. This is just a picture showing the shaft that is being built because we have to tunnel down in Bethesda, in order to get from our street level, one level down from our street level, Purple Line station down to the Washington Metro Red Line station, which you can, we are showing in the next slide. Next slide, please. This slide shows the configuration between the Purple Line station and the Red Line station for Metro. We will be up at street level. We will be connected to a high-speed elevator that was coordinated through with Montgomery County, which will take us all the way down to the Metro level, at which time there is a tunnel section that needs to be traversed to get over to the Washington Metro Tunnel, where a new mezzanine will be built, and that mezzanine will in turn have the vertical circulation to take you down to the Red Line station itself to board the Red Line trains. Next slide, please. This is a visual of what we believe the Bethesda Metro Purple Line station is going to be. This one is an enclosed station because of the location where it happens to be. Next slide, please. Here's a picture showing some construction effort that was going on at the Silver Spring Transit System. Silver Spring Transit Center. This happened to be showing some girders that had to be placed across Colesville Road at night in order to connect from the light rail alignment, which was heading back west towards 16th Street. And the next slide shows what the Silver Spring Metro station is going to look like. Our platform is actually going to be on top of the Silver Spring Transit Center at the same level where there is a bus turnaround station. Is that the Kiss and Ride section? It may be the Kiss and Ride. At the Silver Spring Metro station, there will actually be from the Purple Line, it's taking an elevator down one level and then traveling across the Silver Spring Transit Center to then enter into the Washington Metro station. That's probably one of the more complex transitions will be at Silver Spring Transit Center. This next picture shows the College Park bus loop at College Park. Our connection is fairly clean. We are actually going to be in between where the buses come in and the Washington Metro station. So it's basically right next to what is the existing College Park parking garage is where our Purple Line station will be. And from there, it will just be entering down into the Washington Metro station. Next slide shows, this is a picture showing Campus Drive, University of Maryland station. This is actually in the middle of campus. This is not the Metro station. This is just showing an example of how we are going to be in the middle of the road and right in the middle of all the College Park, University of Maryland campus. This is more where you see something that's a little more akin to a bus station type of platform. The next slide is showing some construction progress at the New Carrollton Metro station. It's not a particularly interesting picture, but if we go to the next drawing, the next slide, please. The New Carrollton Metro station Purple Line is going to be on the Ellen Road side of the New Carrollton station, which to me is the unfamiliar side, having grown up in the area. I was always used to coming in on the Beltway side, if you will, and swooping into New Carrollton. I never really knew what was on the other side of that tunnel, but apparently there's a parking lot and access to Amtrak, and now it's going to be the Purple Line station. So we are going to be at level with the bus loop that's there for New Carrollton, as well as the tunnel that will take you then into either Amtrak or the Washington Metro station for the Orange Line. The next slide shows a typical center station configuration. We have two types of stations. We have it where the platform is in between the trains. And this is a drawing showing what it would look like if it was in between the trains. And then this now, which is called side platform, is where we have the platforms on the outside of the trains, and there's one platform for one direction, what for the eastbound direction, and one platform for the westbound direction. So just like with Washington Metro, center and side platforms. And then talk a little bit about our light rail vehicle. The light rail vehicle is a different look than the Washington Metro vehicles. We are going to run single cars. However, those cars are fairly long. Each light rail vehicle has 80 seats available. It has low boarding so that you can enter directly without having to use a vehicle lift. And we also have lots of space for our fold-down chairs that accommodate wheelchairs, bicycles, just standing in general. This next drawing shows one view looking through the vehicle. You will be able to see from end to end on the vehicle. Most of the vehicles have already been manufactured. They're up in our plant in Elmira, New York, getting tested, and we hope to ship them to Maryland in 2023. The next shot shows where we have some bike storage. They're hooks on each side of the vehicle so that the bikes can be lifted off the ground and hung by these hooks. And then the next slide shows some construction or manufacturing photos showing where some of the areas are for wheelchair users. You'll see there's two photos, the left side and the middle side. The left side shows the largest area that accommodates wheelchairs. The middle photo shows, I guess what I'd call them, a medium size area for wheelchairs. And then at each end of the vehicle, there is a short area with steps. But actually up those steps, there are a few areas with fold-up seats too. That's not for wheelchair users, but it is for other areas, I guess probably more likely for luggage storage or other big pieces of equipment. With that, that actually ends. Did we skip a slide? There it is. We are always looking for feedback, questions, etc. We do have a website, which is purplelinemd.com, where you can sign up to get construction updates as we continue to work over the next 4 years. We also have an outreach email address. That's outreach@purplelinemd.com, where you can email us any questions you might have. And then we do have a 24-hour hotline where you can call us in English or in Spanish with questions that you may have where you want to speak to a person. The English number is 443. Gary, I'm having trouble seeing that. My screen is flashing a little bit. Can you go over the phone numbers?
I can. 451-3706 or, for Spanish speakers, 443-451-3705.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Again, those phone numbers are being monitored 24/7 in the evenings It does go to a call center, so it may take us a little longer to respond, but we will have someone there to answer your call at any time. So with that, I thank you, and I know that the Purple Line hasn't been to this meeting in a long time, so we are here to answer any questions or just listen to what you all have to say. Again, my name is Matthew Pollack. I work for Maryland Department of Transportation, Maryland Transit Administration, and I am the executive director for the Purple Line. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. One question I have right now is, how many entrances are there to the train?
Ah, that's a great question. We do have level boarding. We have multiple boarding. Off the top of my head, I don't know exactly how many sets of doors we have. That sounds like something I really should know the answer to. And I apologize for that. I would say that there's at least four door sections.
If I'm not mistaken, I mean, back when I was there, I think they were using two door cars, so that in two sets of cars would be four entries. But that may have changed, but that's what it was previously.
Yeah. Now that we've gone to the single car, that car has five segments that make it up. And I believe that four of the segments have doors on them. And that fifth segment is just sort of an articulation. It's a bend, a section that bends to help us get around curves. So I'm pretty sure that it's four, but Chair, I will get back to you on how many doors.
And how about how fares are entered? Will it be tickets or some sort of pass? And will there be pass recorders at each door or what?
Understood. We are going to do, currently there are two methods envisioned. One is compatible with Maryland and one is compatible with Washington Metro. So on the Maryland side, we are going to have those ticket vending machines that are going to take cash and credit, and they will issue a paper ticket that will be your proof of payment. For the Washington Metro, we are putting in validators, which are basically the same as a fare box, only it's a tap fare box, but these will be on the side on the platforms where you can take your Metro smart card and tap those validators, and it will deduct the fare from a smart trip card. And then there will be inspectors on the train that can then read your smart card to validate that you did have a deduction on the
ticket. Thank you, Matt. Yep. Anu, do you know in which order the hands came up? I see Doris, Denise, and Kelly have their hands up, but I don't know which order.
Yes, Chair Calabia, it was Kelly Simono, then Denise Rush, and then Doris Ray.
Thank you. Kelly?
Yes, hi, this is Kelly Simono, and I just have a question related to kind of forward thinking. Obviously, this is a long-term project that, you know, really when it's up and functioning will be, you know, years down the road. And with that in mind, you know, that it's very likely that accessibility standards may adjust or improve in that timeline. What are y'all doing to kind of forward think on accessibility issues, not just what requirements are in place today, but what we may need in place in 2025 and beyond?
Good question.
Yeah, that is a good question, Kelly. I don't have a spectacular answer for you. So let me just think about this. We are set up and our designer is only able to design to the requirements that are currently in place. And likewise, our constructor can only build to the designs that are in place. To the extent that requirements come forward over the next couple years, really it then becomes a matter that the Department of Transportation, we will have to review those new regulations. And to the extent that we are able to implement them from the design, you know, we would do that, and that would be an additional cost that wouldn't be borne by the contractor. We would then reimburse them for any associated work. I guess, Kelly, I'm not sure that we necessarily have any particular hooks in the system that would future set us up. I guess I'd welcome any thoughts on if there are known future proofing type of items that could be considered, that we could consider early.
Well, I mean, I guess this is Kelly again. I mean, you know, thinking it's always this dilemma for the accessibility community is like, you know, you're working on it, you get there, but then we kind of are, once you get there, there's been more developments and then it's lagging behind to our community's detriment. And so, you know, what discussions are being had with the Department of Transportation about federal regulations, the U.S. Access Board, you know, those types of things to think, you know, what changing landscape, what may be, you know, I'm looking at platforms and those adjustments. I know that, like, overall on a federal level, there's a lot being looked at as far as Amtrak and how platforms can be improved there, because again, it was a very lagged system that now has a lot of problems for the disability community. So I guess that was what I was curious as to, when we're looking at, you know, a futuristic modern projects such as the Purple Line, you know, let's be forward thinking when it comes to the disability community as well.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. I guess in some ways, maybe what we're doing is by trying to simplify things, it helps to future proof, if you will, by keeping things at the street level wherever possible. And certainly accommodations for electrical and mechanical components are there. But you're right, I don't know where we're headed, and it's something we will have to keep a look at.
We will be interested to hear that and how that develops, so thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Rush?
Who is next?
Ms. Rush, if you would, sure, go ahead, please.
This is Ms. Rush. My question is chaining on to Kelly's question. Who's advising you? You're not going to have an advisory. Who is advising you on what is needed for the disability community? Are you going to have an advisory committee Who's advising you on what to do for the disability community?
Well, I think in general, the Maryland Transit Administration, we are part of the Maryland Transit Administration, so we work through any of our outreach programs as far as working with the community and making sure that we've accommodated all of the design requirements. Our system is essentially designed at this point. I would say it's 96% designed. So most of the outreach and discussions took place over the prior years, probably going back as far as, I want to say, maybe 2014 through 2018 might have been the larger period of public outreach and working to make sure that the accommodations were understood. I don't know if that answers your question. Keep going.
Well,
Well, the metro system has been up for quite a while, and every day there's something else that is being advised, or things are changing. So you need somebody consistently working and walking with you on this. I think you all need to look at that very closely. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me make a note.
Yeah. Please do.
Yeah.
It's better to catch things early on than to have to retrofit afterwards.
Yep. No, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your candor.
I may add, Mr. Pollock and Mr. Witherspoon, I know MTA does have a body similar to the AAC there, CACET, I believe it was called. I can't remember everything right now. However, to their point, since this is going to be operating basically in this service area, I think the CACET can advise you, but perhaps we may look at just being open, we may look at creating perhaps a, not a new subcommittee, but a subset of our committee to provide direct recommendations and advisory opinions to the Maryland Transit Administration Purple Line team about this specific project. You've already been working with WMATA and particularly the Office of ADA Policy and Planning, which I used to head up, but is now being head up by a person far more superior than I am, and that's Carol Lopez. I behoove you to listen to her as well on recommendations when it comes to accessibility. But in addition to your own committee, I think we're gonna be able to utilize this excellent body of individuals who are outstanding public transit users in this region to feed ideas and recommendations and advice to you and your team.
I think that would be appreciated, absolutely.
Yes, as we mentioned to our prior speakers, we have ideas and questions regarding the, for example, the location of elevator buttons, aids that are used in waiting stations, the kind of benches that would help people with disabilities, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Doris?
Yes, thank you. I associate myself very strongly with the remarks made by Kelly and Mr. Blake.
A little louder, please.
I'm sorry. I want to associate myself with the remarks made by Kelly and Denise and Mr. Blake about coordination, particularly since I am living on the Virginia side, but people throughout the region, once this gets started, are going to come over and want to use the Purple Line. But I wanted to ask a couple of things. One is, are the stations designed with entrances and vertical access that is, so if there's only one entrance to the station, will it be made up of, will it be a fully accessible entrance rather than, I heard something about ramps, and I'm not sure whether some of these stations are going to have one accessible and one stair entrance, and I'm just asking whether you're going to have one entrance that's fully accessible to all that everybody goes into, and even if you have two, both entrances being accessible. I wanted to ask what the vehicles look like. Do they look more and operate more like a metro train, or do they look more like a streetcar? And then with respect to the stations, there are only four stations I'm hearing, but are there stops in between? Because, you know, you were saying that, for example, when you get to College Park, it's going to be street level, but I, and something about it being up in the campus, having gone to College Park myself, I'm just curious because it would be a great boon if the Purple Line has several stops with, you know, going, I don't know whether you're using Route 1 or East-West Highway or what. Those are the questions that I had.
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize for not being clear about that earlier. We do have 21 stations along the alignment. Each one will have the platform. It'll either be a side or a center platform. All 21 stations will be fully accessible. It will stop at each station when it's running. I know sometimes bus systems, if there's not a call made for a bus stop, it might keep going. This light rail will be stopping at all 21 stations as it traverses from east to west and back to east. The vehicles themselves, it's interesting. In theory, it's supposed to be more like a streetcar. However, streetcars are pretty small, and this vehicle is actually quite large. It's a single car, and boy, I forget how long it is. I want to say 160 feet, but I don't know off the top of my head. It's probably going to look closer to the new metro vehicles in that it's a.
I think it's 140 feet, Matt.
140 feet?
Yeah.
It's 140 feet, and it's made up of five pieces that are all connected like a centipede, if you will. You can see from one end to the other. It's an open gangway from end to end, so you can travel from one end to the other. But it's just a single long vehicle that will be traversing in the manner of a streetcar, and that we don't create trains like Metro does when they put six or eight of them together. I think, Doris, I may have answered all your questions, but I apologize.
Platform leveling when you come on and off the trains, is that like a ramp that comes out from under the not clear about that. Is it just level to begin with, or is there like a you know, I'm thinking about what they used to have, for example, in Denver, where they had electric streetcars and they had islands, so the ramp came out. It automatically came out from under the vehicle. Is it something like that, or is it just more like our metro train entrances?
This will be more like the metro train entrances. It will have a suspension system that ensures level boarding at all of the platforms, so that there will not have to be a ramp like you mentioned in Denver, or I'm used to seeing in Pittsburgh. Or on you know, the older bus systems, there won't be a gap between the vehicles or the platform, either in the horizontal or the vertical direction.
Great.
Anu, is
yes. Chair Calabria,
are there any people who are in the public that want to comment?
Well, Carol just raised her hand up and she probably has some comments to add. So Carol, please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you, Matt, for a great presentation. I think that I'm actually looking on my other screen at your train, a rail car, and it is just like you described. It has several parts and it's all attached by an accordion, so that it could be flexible. One thing I'd like to clarify to the advisory committee is that the actual doors to the the purple line trains are, the threshold is not that much higher than the street level. It's probably about, I don't remember, but it may be 10 to 12 inches high. It's not that much. So when Matt was talking about a ramp, it's a ramp that spans, that goes up about 10 to 12 inches, I believe, or it might be even less. And that the rail car, that the cars, their cars have, seem to have six doors. That was one of the questions. I'm just looking at a picture on the website. So they seem to have six doors. And I do have a question though for Matt. There's some steps in an area. Are those steps only at the ends of the full car so that you can go from one door to another if you're in a wheelchair?
That's correct. The only area with steps is at the extreme ends of the vehicle. That's to put the powered what we call the bogies, the powered wheels on both ends of the car. And then in the middle, the wheels are not powered. And so that's why we're able to put this wide open space, because there's not a motor in the middle sections of the vehicle.
Right.
By the way, Matt, did you say that this is an open gangways train?
Yes. Yes. So from end to end, other than the very extremes where there are two steps up on both ends into the operating sections.
So the New York MTA will have open gangways in a couple of years. And this may be the first in our region, or maybe the second in the whole country.
Well, it's a little deceiving because it's only one car. So it's a little unfair to, I mean, I think so, sure, we're the first, but because we're not connecting cars together, we don't have a problem of exiting and entering.
So this is not a married couple?
Correct.
Trains? Okay.
So is it safe to say that this is a car that has both ends powered to drive in either direction?
That's correct.
Okay, and that's why the stepped areas are on the ends, because you probably need more equipment to move it or stop the car, et cetera. That's great. Yeah, another thing that the advisory committee is usually concerned about is emergency calls. For example, is there a way that somebody who needs help within the car can contact the operator if they're on the other side of the train, of the vehicle?
Yes. I don't know exactly where they're located, but usually all the cars have a call button that is directly connected to the intercom for the driver. For contact.
Excellent. Yeah. And from the pedestrian perspective, how will a pedestrian know that it's safe to cross the street in front of one of your vehicles?
The only place to cross the tracks will be protected crossings.
Okay.
There will be, I should back up. So for instance, we're driving all the way through the University of Maryland campus and just in the street. So we can't protect that street. When it's running in the street, we can't provide any additional separation. It's just like it was a vehicle. You cross at the crosswalks, and if you're not crossing at the crosswalks, you know, bad person, but look left, look right, and be very careful.
Okay, so I guess my question was, let's assume I'm blind and I'm crossing the street accidentally. Yes. The operator will see me and stop.
Yes, they are operating the vehicles at all times, okay. Like a bus.
Okay.
Obviously, if you step right in front of a vehicle, there's no way for a bus or a train to stop and brake that fast. But we will have, signalized intersections with the full pedestrian signalization and everything. Most of it is going to be associated, however, with street crossings for vehicles as well. I don't think we're putting in separate pedestrian crossings other than at the normal intersections, street intersections.
Thank you, Matt. It's 6 o'clock, and by contract with the interpreter service, we have to end. But please remember Denise Rush's request that we have some kind of mechanism to help in advising you on the kind of issues that we've been bringing up over the years.
Thank you
again, Matt.
Chair Calabia.
Gary, we really appreciate it.
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. I just want to take a quick second to make my announcement for public comments. Anybody looking to send their public comments can email us or call us. Email us metroaacchair@wmata.com. Phone number is 202-962-1100. This has been a very productive meeting, a very wonderful discussion. So thank you, all the guests. And was there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
No objections. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you, Anu. Thank you, Gary. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. You. Thank you, Matt, again.
Yes, very space age.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.